The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Yeah, we're in the midst of the summer. Apparently, the influx of jellyfish in the sea is reducing a little bit. So I think people are getting back to the beaches again. And the summer is in full swing, absolutely.
Amazing, because here it is absolutely, absolutely freezing. Anthony, the subject of the demolition of these homes in Israel has become quite a controversial one. And in fact, BBC, Al Jazeera, everywhere around the world, this of course is being reported. Can you give us some context? What on earth is going on there?
So I think it's really important at this stage to separate the facts from the emotion, because this is being reported on very emotively. And I think it's important for people to first understand the facts before giving rise to any emotions and to jumping to conclusions about what's happening here. So the situation is that approximately 12 buildings which have been constructed, are in the process of being constructed in East Jerusalem on the Israeli side of the security barrier that has been constructed there, are now in the process of being demolished as a result of the fact that they've been built illegally. And so the question is, why are they considered to be illegal? What is the issue here? They're in an area of East Jerusalem that's known as Wadi al-Khumus. It's in a section of East Jerusalem known as Sur Bahir. And the issue is that that particular area was really under the auspices of the Bethlehem municipality, ironically, until quite recently. And so therefore, the Palestinians who've been constructing these buildings there said they appealed to the Bethlehem municipality, and apparently they were given authority to construct the buildings by the Bethlehem municipality. The issue is that back in 2011, the Israeli government, in light of the fact that the security barrier had been constructed there, and let's just park for a moment the issue of the security barrier, because there are people who think that that in and of itself is a problem. There are people who think that the security barrier has really done exactly what it's called and has brought a huge amount of security. But be that as it may, the security barrier is there. And the Israeli government decided back in 2011 that homes, buildings, construction should not be done within a certain proximity to the security barrier. And I guess it's for the same reason that you would decide that people don't live right along the border of Zimbabwe or Botswana or whatever it is. There's a certain area of no man's land which separates you from the border for obvious reasons, to allow security patrols to prevent any security related issues from taking place, because that presents something of a borderline. It presents something of a barrier. And so back in 2011, the Israeli government decided that homes, buildings, construction should not be undertaken within a certain proximity of the security barrier. And yet in 2014, these buildings, which are now being destroyed, began. They started to construct them. And so this has been through the law courts in Israel. This has been ruled upon by the High Court of Justice, where the parties have gone to challenge the orders that were already issued some time ago for the destruction of these buildings. It was challenged in the High Court of Justice, and the High Court ruled that the structures should be demolished because they, and these are the words of the High Court, constitute a security danger to the area of the security fence. That's what the High Court decided. So this is not something where Israel has decided overnight, hang on a second, let's have a little bit of fun tomorrow. Let's go and see how many buildings we can destroy because we've got nothing better to do. This is something which has been ongoing through the legal process already for some time. So it would come as absolutely no surprise to anybody when earlier this week the Israeli authorities issued notices to people who are living there. And when I say people who are living there, even though there are 12 buildings that are involved, apartment buildings, multi-story apartment buildings, the number of souls living there right now are 17. 17 people. That's what we're talking about in terms of who are being
so when the Palestinian Authority says it's a massacre, well, it's not
17 people. Okay, there's no massacre because
no
one guy
hurt.
Decided out of the 17 that he didn't want to leave the place and that he was prepared to allow the building to fall upon his head in order to protest his opposition to the destruction. And all the others have left the building because they've been taken out by the Israeli authorities. Nobody's going to allow buildings to collapse and cause massacres. This is not a massacre. Okay, and this is not something which endangers the two-state solution, as has been kind of, you know, such emotive language being used, you know, because of the political implications of all of this. There is such emotion involved, and most of it is just really untrue. There is no possible way that this could endanger in any way the two-state solution or the idea of the two-state solution. If people want a two-state solution to exist, trust me, these 12 buildings will make absolutely no difference one way or the other. Okay? And there is certainly no massacre, and there is certainly no ethnic cleansing. I mean, I've heard every possible emotive phrase used in order to describe the situation that's going on at the moment. There's none of that. Now, I accept that people can hold a view about whether the security barrier should be there or not. We do know that the International Court of Justice in 2004 found that the barrier was illegal. There is a ruling like that under the International Court of Justice. You can agree with that or not agree with that. That's your prerogative. Having now found the situation that the security barrier is up, the Israeli government, I think quite logically, decided that there would be no new construction. By the way, there are other buildings that are within the area of that security barrier. They are pre-existing. The Israeli government is not touching those buildings. These are not buildings which are being demolished right now. The ones that are being demolished are the buildings that have been built illegally subsequent to the security barrier being put up there and subsequent to the decision by the government, which has been freely advertised and is well known, that no construction within that area will be permitted. So in spite of that ruling, these constructions have gone ahead, and these are the buildings which are now being destroyed. So as I say, now, you know, when you have the facts to hand, you can then make an educated decision as to whether this is really jeopardizing the future of the two-state solution, whether this is really a massacre, whether this is considered to be ethnic cleansing, whatever you want to use. Now decide on the basis of what you know rather than just having an emotive reaction to something that you've heard about third hand and sounds like a very good bandwagon to jump onto in order to criticize the Israeli government, because that's really what's been happening here.
What's also so fascinating is you've got this mass destruction of towns, cities and towns, people being killed in Syria. And of course, and that's happening on a daily basis and you barely see it in the news. Whereas this story, which is actually something that happens in every country around the world where homes that are illegally built are demolished is international news.
I think the problem, Howard, is that, you know, you have this kind of vision, you have this picture, this photo opportunity of Israeli soldiers, IDF soldiers going along in order to secure the surrounding area before the demolition of the buildings takes place. And that is something which sends a message to the world, because that's unfortunately how we have to live in our country, where certain civic things that are taking place in the ordinary course of business need to have army protection in order for them to take place. And so therefore, you know, as I say, you have this photo opportunity of soldiers going into these what seem to be residential buildings, and, you know, without the proper context and the proper description and people trying to understand what precipitates that situation, people are of course already jumping to conclusions. And of course I agree that, you know, Israel is being held up to an entirely different standard from the standards that are being applied to other countries around the world. You know, that's an argument that we've spoken about so many times before, and unfortunately it hasn't served any purpose up until now. So, you know, I think we just have to rather focus on the facts to hand rather than try to say, well, why, you know, are we being treated differently than everybody else?
Well, I want to add another perspective as well. And I went to a talk and had a discussion with Matty Friedman, who's a Canadian Israeli journalist and author, and in fact a superb author. And one of the things that he said was, and it gave me a very, very different perspective. And he said, you know, organizations, press organizations, and he listed a few. Basically what he said was that, and I'm trying to think which organization it was, but one of the organizations had the same amount of journalists in Israel as they had in the whole of Africa. Now, what that effectively means is because there's, and I don't know if it was Reuters, I don't know which organization it was, but what that effectively means, and I think this is relevant to all of them, is what this means is the minute anything happens in Israel, there's an incredible amount of resources, photo opportunities, and other opportunities to get this news out. Whereas something happens in Syria or in Gaza or in the rest of, or in Africa, where journalists aren't present, it's very, very difficult for anybody to access that information and the visuals. So because of that, Israel always will land up, so long as there's this incredible focus of journalists and media within that small country, that means that Israel is always going to be viewed in this way.
I think that's completely correct. And the question is it the chicken or is it the egg? In other words, are all those journalists here because people are genuinely interested in what goes on in Israel and the Middle East? Or is the interest of the people being fueled by the fact that there's so many journalists here who are producing so many stories? And of course, you know, bad news sells. We know that as well. Technology in Israel is everywhere. You can go in the middle of the desert and have Wi-Fi. And so to send a picture to your Facebook.
Well, that's also why, because it's actually so easy for journalists there. It's actually so pleasant.
So it is easy, to get accreditation and to also have access to the pictures, because pictures really sell. And we've seen so many times in the past how pictures tell a story that's just untrue. You know, you get a picture of these children hiding behind their parents. And then, of course, the caption is added that this is what children are feeling as a result of fear from IDF soldiers. But the reality of the situation is that if you were to bother to really go down to the borders, the boundaries, the checkpoints, and see how the IDF soldiers treat the children there, you'll get an entirely different perspective on the situation. So unfortunately, while a picture tells 1,000 words, it's not necessarily the words that describe the reality of the situation.
Right, absolutely right. Anthony, before I let you go, I do have to ask you about this story because I love it. Israel is testing the first artificial intelligence traffic lights. I don't think it gets cooler. I don't think it gets any cooler than that. Tell us about it.
Well, the way the traffic lights work generally in this country, and I guess around the world, is that they're either set to a certain time. So, you know, after 10 or 20 or 30 seconds, the lights change, and it's on a predetermined program. So you could be in the middle of the night, you could be the only car in the area, and you'll have to wait until the light turns green, because that's the way that it's been pre-programmed to work. There are other lights that have these kind of sensitive places, sensitive area right in the front. So as soon as a car goes over, encroaches into that detection area, then the green light becomes available because of a lack of flow of traffic or an even flow of traffic from both sides. But here now we have the situation of so-called artificial intelligence traffic lights, which involves a whole series of cameras that are installed along the roads that lead up to the intersection. And they detect the vehicles that come there, including the number of cars, how fast they're traveling, what times of the day, whether their car's there right now or not. And according to what those cameras detect, they then control the traffic light to allow the freest flow of traffic that's possible through that intersection. So it's all about the detections that lead up to the traffic light, the vehicles that are coming up. So theoretically, by the time you already reach the intersection, the light should be green for you because you've already been detected on your way up to the traffic light. And they're trying this out at a very, very busy intersection near to Ben Gurion Airport. And I guess if it's successful, that this is something that will, you know, then be propagated around Israel and potentially around the world by this company called Intelligent Traffic Control, which is an Israeli startup. Which is starting this trial. So we're going to watch it carefully, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about it again once it's been set up and operating.
Absolutely. Sounds fantastic. It is 8:00, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow.